Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is the glorious one, Bobby Roode, and you're watching Going In Raw.
Hey, Brendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw,
the only pro wrestling podcast you'll be listening to right here at youtube.com/
Your
Steven Larson.
Is almost shot.
Shut up. No, don't jinx
we
it.
We have a lot to do
don't
today.
Don't jinx it. We're into high CPM territory. We're in like the Black Friday area of holiday sales.
Yeah.
Advertising revenue is up.
Time to churn out as many videos as we can.
Oh, man, I'm going to run some ideas by you. Much content. Oh,
short
so
week
much
we got
money.
Holiday this week.
No, I'm just talking about through December.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, man. Just pump out.
They all have to be podcasts because those are the real money makers there.
I know, man. You think I don't know that? I know that.
I hope you know that.
Anyways.
You better know that.
This is Going In Raw. We're going to talk about NXT TakeOver today. But before we do that, I want to remind you can support Going In Raw at the Patreon at patreon.com/ Steven Larson. Got all sorts of reward tiers, including live access to live streams that nobody else has access to. Chat trivia access where you can win an autographed card. Like a wrestling card autographed,
by us. We'll have our first Tournament of Champions on Wednesday.
That's right. Very exciting.
So those of you who have won chat trivia thus far, be able to participate, and nobody else.
Yes, correct. We're also available at Pro Wrestling Tees tomorrow. Tomorrow is the beginning of the big, huge Black Friday sale at Pro Wrestling Tees.
That's Wednesday. We'll say Wednesday.
Yeah, it's Wednesday.
The 22nd.
This is going up Tuesday morning.
Yes, very early Tuesday
so that's
morning.
Tomorrow.
And also, you have that shirt. Show that off.
Hey.
Also,
you're not me.
Cold Water Larson shirt. Design's done.
Is he uploading yet?
No.
Ooh, no guarantees today. It'll be up then.
It'll be up during the course of the sale.
At some point, it should be up during the course of the sale.
I'm going to try to upload it today on Monday.
Awesome. Very good. I should try to get a new Going In Raw shirt up too.
Yeah, didn't you do that Interdimension Tension style one?
I'm not huge into it. Not huge. I have a couple other ideas.
All right, yeah, we need another Going In Raw.
Another design. Going In Raw design.
I can do the fun wrestling one, but in Going In Raw style.
Oh, that'd be cool. That'd actually be really neat.
Raw in the chrome letters and Going In the script.
Oh, I like that. Oh, that'd be really good.
Okay.
Do it.
I'll do it.
Anyways. That's our show.
All right, bye, everybody.
Bye. Now, we're going to talk about TakeOver now.
Yeah, that was a fun show.
This was probably my favorite TakeOver of the year, I'll be honest with you. Because it was, look, they always have great matches.
Yeah.
But this had not just great matches, but the spirit of goofy WCW, which is obviously where they got War Games from. The spirit of goofy WCW, I feel, was in this show. In addition, it had the blow-off, well, what I think is the blow-off, to what is probably my feud of the year.
I could see that going on.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah,
really?
I think it could. Yeah, based on Velveteen Dream's reaction after the match, where he was kind of nursing his injuries, but also kind of smiled.
Right.
I could see this continuing.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I could see it. I could see it either way.
It's so good. I would hate to see it end.
Yeah, no, my thing is this. It's so good, it needs to end.
See, I think there's more they can.
You know the adage: leave them wanting more.
Oh, I understand that,
and then revisit it on Raw
but
5 years.
I feel like there's more they can get into.
Yeah, I loved it so much. Anyways, we'll kick it off with they had a fantastic opening package. Mm-hmm. I watched it. I watched that again this morning. I was just like, I'm cleaning up around here. I'm getting ready for the podcast. Let me turn it back on, and I guess maybe I was puttering about or something, or maybe I came into it like a second late. But holy crap! That opening video package was great. I think maybe also especially knowing what was going to happen throughout the course of the show, because there was a myriad surprises. There was a ton of surprises.
Yes.
So a great opening package. We went right into it with Cassius Ohno versus Lars Sullivan.
Yes.
A couple people on Twitter were sort of dogging Lars Sullivan's intro music.
He has a new entrance, too. He did not show his behind.
Oh, I know. What did you think about? Okay,
It was reminiscent of Baron Corbin's original entrance.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I like it.
You know why I like it? Okay, here's the thing. So I'll never not love him coming out and showing his ass to everybody. And in fact, I love that my love for that is so has been so pronounced that on Twitter I got a lot of my Twitter blew up with our friendos out there saying, "I can't believe this. I'm very disappointed. I know Steve is too. No, Lars Sullivan coming out, showing his asshole to everybody.
His buttocks.
His buttocks to everybody.
You got to watch the curse words.
His posterior, his beehole.
Yes.
You're right. I'm sorry. To everybody. And but I actually, in terms of like drama, this comes off a lot cooler.
Oh, yeah.
Because here's the thing. It's just him.
Yeah.
There's like no movement. He's just there.
Well, no, he does the same things he did before, but his back was to the camera, so you'd initially see it.
Right, I know, but he actually, he holds there for a moment.
Yes, he does.
Before he does any of that.
Like I said, it's very reminiscent of Baron Corbin's old entrance.
And it's just, it is, but even with Baron Corbin's, it wasn't a full, this is a full body shot, and reminiscent of Corbin's, it's got a red light just on him,
mm-hmm.
so it's nothing but a red Lars Sullivan,
mm-hmm.
and you just get to soak him in, and that's what you need to do.
What did Mauro Ranallo call
a Jack Kirby creation come to life?
Perfect,
which was my favorite Mauro line, maybe
perfect
ever.
Perfect description.
Super obscure. And then he says, "We can all marvel at him," and I'm like, "Oh, Mauro, that's good. That's really good.
Some good puns there."
Too bad we're still blocked by him on Twitter. Anyways,
this is a decent enough match.
No, this was a good match.
Cassius Ohno came in with some Duke University inspired gear.
Yeah, I saw that.
No Sacramento Kings gear, unfortunately, but nonetheless, I don't know how Ohno does it, but all his kicks and elbows sound devastating.
Yeah, I know.
Like, if you just close your eyes and listen to the match, you'd think that Lars Sullivan got knocked out several times.
Yeah, I know. It's very stiff. My favorite to this day is the Cesar Bononi one to the back of the head.
He kind of did that to Lars Sullivan.
Yeah.
Lars was standing up.
Yeah.
He gave him a forearm in the back of the head.
When you drop, like I say, I imagine it's probably a special art dropping like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah.
Because you have to fake like you're getting concussed, essentially.
Pretty much.
You know what I mean?
And you got to feel comfortable landing on that mat, which isn't soft.
Yeah. You have to go like you're
like a sack of potatoes.
You can't brace yourself with your arms. No. You just have to fall.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I mean, the story of this is basically Cassius Ohno, the knockout artist. He uses that devastating elbow in his knee strikes.
Yes.
And he
kicks.
And he fed Lars his entire arsenal multiple times. And Lars basically, although he was shaken, he was never stunned.
Well, there's that whole sequence where Lars just no-sold everything.
Yeah.
And then led to Lars winning with his finisher, which I guess is called Freak Accident.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. No, it was a really fun match. I loved it. I can't get enough of Cassius Ohno matches.
Yeah.
I still don't know what the plan is for Cassius Ohno. It'd be a total shame. How long was Joe in NXT before he went on? Because I had kind of the same feeling with Joe. I was like, are they just bringing Joe in just to be Joe in NXT for like 2 years? And I never was convinced because I never really knew what their full plans were for NXT. But I was like, I could see them maybe bringing Joe in for just a period of time to lend some veteran heft to NXT.
No, that was your speculation. So he debuted in NXT May 20th, 2015. And then he was brought up January 30th, 2017 to Raw. So almost two years.
And then Cassius Ohno has been around less than a year now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it was the end of last year. Word started getting out that he might be signing.
Because he's late 30s, right?
Yeah, he's up there. He's mid-late 30s.
Yeah. So my thing is this. I would love for him to have his
time on the main roster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I mean, at a certain point, it's like, yeah, he's 37. I mean, AJ's 40.
You see AJ said in an interview that a couple of years, he might not wrestle.
Yeah. Because the dude was like, yeah, a couple of years from me. A couple of years. I'm 40 right now.
I know.
Yeah. Hey, man. Friggin', I'm sorry, but after that Brock match, he's the best in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Right now. He's my number one. Jeez. To bring Brock to that kind of match?
I know.
Are you kidding me?
I know. We all thought, there was a part of me that thought AJ had a shot. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We did that review yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Aleister Black versus Velveteen Dream.
Dream, please.
What a great, great bit of storytelling in this match.
This is I'm probably going to call it right now. Friend of Orger coming up. We need to get those compiled.
Yes.
My personal favorite feud of the year.
Yeah.
Right here. Because the storytelling, it's so simple, yet so effective. We've had, what, three or four promos maybe? A couple of run-ins on matches? Like less than eight encounters, less than seven encounters between these two. And then to pay this match, and I called it exactly right because I know storytelling.
Okay.
Aleister Black picks up the win. Velveteen Dream gets the win because he gets what he wants.
Yes.
Acknowledgement, validation
yes.
from Aleister Black. But still, even knowing all that, it was so damn good.
It was. And it was full of surprises.
Let's talk about Dream's freaking gear.
Hold on. There's something before that I want to mention that I made note of.
Okay.
I think pretty much since Aleister Black debut, they've been billing him as 205 pounds. Not at TakeOver, 215.
Nice! Woo! So right on, man. I didn't even know. Good job noticing
and
that.
And then maybe it's just because they said that. He looks like he's filling out a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that, too. Yeah, yeah, I kind of noticed that, too.
His chest looks a little broader.
Yeah.
His arms look a little larger. Next, yes. Velveteen Dream came down to the ring with some chaps on, unzipped those chaps.
And a very sexy dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then unveiled perhaps the most incredible, majestic ring pants I've ever seen.
There is something, and I love that they were able to nail what his gimmick should be so perfectly. And now we're beyond just, oh, he's, like they take the tiny bit of inspiration with Prince, with the Prince thing, because it's obvious it's an homage.
Yeah. Or at least it initially began as that.
Yeah, and superficially, you could totally see it. But with this feud, they've expanded it to be something so much more.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's not even that you can, that it's so tangible that you can say, oh, he's this, this, and this. It's just you have more of his, of who he is mm-hmm. as a character, mm-hmm. you know? And
it was kind of all out there on his pants.
There's something about his face when he looks in the camera and they go in close up and he had that great pompadour.
Oh, he also, I love his sunglasses with the
yeah,
third eye lens.
Yeah.
It's so good.
But when he looks at you in that camera and then he's got like the crazy muscular body, but lean, that there's something so perfect
mm-hmm.
for the man playing the character mm-hmm. that fits in with the character. Mm-hmm. They got it exactly right.
Yeah. And I was saying those pants kind of embody all of that.
Yeah, well, he's doing, you know, the Rick Rude inspired thing with
he
the pants.
He is, but he's taking it to a next level.
Right, exactly.
So on one leg, he has himself airbrushed.
Uh-huh.
On the other leg is Aleister Black.
Mm-hmm.
On the rear end
yeah.
has the NXT logo.
Yeah.
But across the front waist, it says, say my name.
Yeah. I mean, he has feud.
It's inspired stuff.
He has feud pants.
Yeah, it's inspired stuff.
it was
so good.
Literal feud pants. I really want to get... I gotta find a place. Some people were tweeting at me.
Oh, to airbrush
you,
pants like that.
Me going in raw.
Logo on the rear end.
And then on the, what would the front be? Hey Friendos, something like that?
Across the waist.
Across the waist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. You gotta get that done. But nobody ever sees my bottom half.
No.
On the show.
Same here.
Yeah. So I don't know when I'd ever
we'll
use
do
those.
A show without the table here. Standing up.
Just standing up, yeah.
Yeah, even on daily, they don't see our bottom half.
Right, exactly. These days, I don't even tuck in my shirt. Anyways, moving on.
No, continuing. Great match.
Yeah, yeah.
And started off in surprising fashion. Aleister Black, during his brief tenure so far in NXT, is known as the show's preeminent striker.
Yeah.
But this whole
kickboxing background,
beginning part of this match was all technical wrestling, and yeah. Aleister Black having a technical response to whatever Velveteen Dream threw at him, and it was great. They made mat-based technical wrestling captivating.
So much of this, too, was, and I'm not taking anything away from Aleister Black, but so much of this was Velveteen Dream's selling ability. Yeah. He's so I've never seen anybody combine athleticism in his selling
mm-hmm.
quite like this before. It was fantastic. Like, the takedowns, even the arm bars.
Yeah, he was, like, doing full-on bumps every time he just kind of got twisted over.
Right. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So even, yeah, like an arm drag,
mm-hmm.
when the way the Dream sold it,
looked
it made
devastating.
It seem impactful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's along with that technical wrestling, there's a lot of awesome character work.
Mm-hmm.
That part where Aleister sat in the middle of the ring, Velveteen Dream was getting on about saying his name, got frustrated, sat down across from him, and then Aleister Black kind of crawled up to him.
It was that moment of recognition where he realized he had to change his game. Because shouting, and it all goes back. It all goes back to when Aleister Black said, I'm not going to pay any mind to a child who's throwing a tantrum, essentially. I'm paraphrasing. He said it much cooler than I did. And Velveteen Dream in that moment was being a child throwing a tantrum. And then he realized, I have to get in his head a different way. And so he did the sit down thing. And Aleister Black said, well, that's not going to work. So he did the slither thing. The only annoying thing is that the TV direction
yeah.
missed it.
Yeah.
Like they cut to they're on a close up of Velveteen Dream, and then he goes, he gets shocked face, and I'm like, the hell?
And then you see the last little bit of Alistair crawling towards him. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, they botched the finish of the match too. At least for the finish, they replayed it.
Yeah. So there was that.
There's after kind of that feeling out process, a lot of mind games. Velveteen Dream starts mounting some offense.
Yeah,
hits his Death Valley Driver somersault, cartwheel combination, which is great. Alistair kicks out of that, and then what was that DDT the Velveteen Dream did? Setting up like Sister Abigail position, wrapped his arm around this way, and like twisted him over for a DDT. I had never seen that before.
Yeah, that was insane. That was awesome. Because the thing is, he's got the reach to do something weird like that. Because usually, you know, he got little tiny arms like me, but he got like his arms like twice my length.
He just wraps
it around. It's like Anderson Silva. Nobody ever beat that guy because he had like the reach that was like he can be like way back here and backpedaling, and then he'd punch you, and it was for anybody else it'd be like the power of somebody's
jab
exactly.
Yeah. Then towards the finish, Velveteen Dream got tied up in the ropes.
And his reaction to that was great, too.
Yeah, hearkening back to, was it 2-3 weeks ago when he did the same to Aleister Black. And he actually did that to Aleister earlier on in this match. Aleister hit him a couple times. Velveteen Dream was getting out of the ropes, starting to kind of come to, was saying, say bye. Got hit with the black mass. Aleister Black gets the pin.
Boom.
After the match, Aleister gets on the mic and just says, "Enjoy infamy, Velveteen Dream."
I mean, it was just, it was the whole character bit between the two, because he sits down and he has the mic, and you know what's coming, but like Velveteen Dream is next to me. It reminded me of the bit between Gargano and Ciampa at the end of their Cruiserweight Classic match, how they both like, you know, sat down next to each other and sort of hugged. It's such a, I mean, it's something you don't see very often in pro wrestling. It's a, you know, when you're sitting, when you're sitting down next to somebody and that person is in pain because he's just been killed by a black mass, there's a vulnerability there, you know? It's like a moment of softness. And he gets on the mic and he says that. He says, "Enjoy your," what do you say?
Enjoy infamy,
Velveteen Dream. And he looks at him when he says it. And then, yeah, Velveteen Dream's reaction was great. You know, he's still selling the injury, but at the very end of, you know, right as Aleister Black is going up, you see like a little smile on his face.
Yeah.
So just really fantastic stuff. I mean, honestly, that was, I mean, the War Games match was so different and so goofy. This was probably my match of the night.
Yeah. Well, the War Games stuff was just so ridiculously brutal.
It was brutal and overbooked and crazy and stupid and funny.
High spot after high spot after high spot. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, anyways, next up, Sanity was
just backstage, and William Regal walks up to him and just says something. It's no audio, so I don't know what he says.
Wait a second. It was Undisputed Era.
That happened. No, this one was Sanity.
Oh, was that?
It hadn't happened a couple times.
That's weird. I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Okay. When was the Undisputed Era one?
Later on, just didn't make note of it. Pretty sure it was Sanity.
Okay. Well, there might have been one of those. I only saw the Undisputed Era one, and I'm pretty sure. Okay, so it didn't happen. It was before this thing.
Okay,
it was in between Lars and Aleister Black.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
They showed a shot of, I don't know why I went to this level of detail, Asuka and Funaki and Finn Balor sitting ringside.
Yeah, it was great.
It's always great to see NXT alumni.
Yeah, I love it.
Sitting ringside, because later on we got Kevin Owens with the Undisputed Era shirt.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Samoa Joe, and then Samoa Joe was there too.
Mm-hmm. Samoa Joe likes good wrestling.
He does.
Yeah. Hey, did you get a chance to watch that Kevin Owens doc?
No.
It was good. See, you should watch it, and then we'll do a review of that. All boom. Right. Content.
All right.
More content.
We're going to review every, like, documentary-style wrestling production now.
Look, man, do you want that money or not? I think you do. I think you do. Anyways.
Next. Fatal 4-Way match to determine the new NXT Women's Champion.
Yeah.
Nikki Cross versus Kairi Sane versus Peyton Royce versus Ember Moon.
Ember Moon 4. Says that in your notes here.
That's a typo. Mm-hmm. Another good match. Fast-paced action.
Talk about win face, loss face. Peyton Royce, man. She came out looking like $1 trillion.
Yeah, and they put the thought, I think, in both our heads when her and Billie Kay walk out.
Yeah.
And as Peyton Royce about to walk to the ring, she thinks with Billie Kay. Billie Kay pulls her inside and pretty much says, "You could do this yourself."
I loved it.
That was fantastic.
God, I loved it. And you can see on Peyton Royce's face the weight of the moment, you know, because they're the biggest match of her career
far.
Um, And, you know, all the great work she's been doing with Billie Kay lately has led to this moment. And that's really, that's something else. You know, it's really great to see that. And you can tell the moment between, I mean, obviously they knew what Billie Kay was going to do, but the words spoken between the two of them
seemed very genuine.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was a genuine moment.
Here, I want to ask you about something because this kind of bugged me.
Wait, hold on a second.
What?
Nikki Cross's sanity theme.
What about it?
Is it your number one yet for sanity themes? Or is Prime Sanity still
Here's
best?
The thing. I don't know. Here's the thing. This is what really bugged me because I haven't noticed them doing this before. The way they shot Sanity's, all the members' entrance, bugged me. It was like this kind of, you know, they're doing the zooms and the crazy pans
and stuff.
And I remember them doing that before.
Yeah.
It, instead of seeming chaotic, it seemed unrehearsed. it was too much.
Yeah.
Especially Nikki Cross's for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Because like they were still getting cameras in positions when they were cutting back and forth. It felt like it was too much.
All right.
It was too chaotic.
Oh,
so I was concentrating on that and not her theme.
Gotcha. All right. Well, keep an eye on that. Keep an ear out for that. Anyways, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
What that was the point I was going to make.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I guess I just sort of was relegated to the background at this point because like, I don't know, she looks like such a badass when she comes out by herself, you know, and somebody captured like a great still of like the production, like the LED screen behind her had like some smoke puffs, but they look kind of like angel wings and she was standing between them and it was a happy accident, but it looked really cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, anyways, I don't know. I think she's great.
Yeah, she is great.
Freaked out Alabama when she was watching. She was like, monster. I was like, pretty much. Kairi Sane looked great, but, you know, nothing abnormal there. Although I think they changed her music.
I thought they changed her music, too.
Yeah. And then Ember Moon came out. She looked great. I'm pretty sure she had Wind Face on.
Yeah.
I just wasn't expecting her to win. But there are some really great spots in this match.
Mm-hmm.
There are some really fantastic spots.
That whole sequence where everybody hit their finisher and someone broke it up at the two count.
Mm-hmm.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Gosh, that was awesome.
What did you think about, let me ask you, what did you think about the Peyton Royce technically being on Nikki Cross on a pin? No, like not a, no, she wasn't literally pinning.
Yeah, yeah, but it was a pinning
head,
situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ref should have counted that.
It was forever, yeah.
Yeah.
Ref should have, or at least been like, I'm about to count, get up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
they shouldn't ignore it.
Yeah.
This is developmental for refs too.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Anyways, towards the end, towards the finish, we had...
it was that sequence where everybody hit their finisher and then someone came in to break it up.
Yeah. Peyton Royce was bringing Nikki Cross up to do something, but they just sort of had their heads together.
Yeah.
You know, in obvious formation to take an eclipse.
A double eclipse.
But to watch the double eclipse is pretty impressive.
Yes.
It was pretty neat. I mean, you know what? The thing about Ember Moon is that you need some precision, but like she could just sort of do this a little bit and go by the person's head. And as long as the person sells
then
you're good.
A decent radius.
Yeah.
As long as hands make contact with head.
Yeah, exactly. Then it's good. Interesting that Peyton Royce is the one who rolled out and Nikki Cross ate the pin.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Mm-hmm.
We both thought that Peyton Royce was probably the one to eat the pin.
Mm-hmm.
So Ember Moon wins. Asuka comes in the ring. William Regal is about to present Ember with the belt. Asuka says, no, I would like to do it.
Yeah.
Nice moment between the two of them.
Oh, it was very nice. Seemed very genuine.
Yes.
Yeah. It kind of always feels like, oh, what could have been? What should have been? You know, like, it really should have had, like, a couple more matches.
I know.
You know, like, a
the
more
two they had
feud.
Were great.
Yeah, I know.
Fantastic. Next, Andrade Cien Almas versus Drew McIntyre. Shout out to the friendo with the fun wrestling shirt in the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Still know who it was.
Ooh, mystery.
But I appreciate it.
Yeah. It's a good design. Good looking design.
Thank
there.
You.
You did good.
Thank you. This was a really, 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 really fast-paced match. It's by far the best match Almas has had in NXT.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like for the first time, this is the match we got to see the full array of his abilities in ring.
Well, I mean, they had to because Drew was so damn big.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's one thing that they were able to cover up really, really well during the build-up to this. I mean, it makes me wonder if that's why they sort of implemented the story of Almas not going face-to-face with
sure
him.
Oh, sure was, yeah.
To cover up the fact that Drew is massive.
He is massive.
But that being said, there was no issue with that during the match. Until we got to the finish. Because
Almas never took his foot off the gas pedal.
Right, exactly. And so it was all just chopping Drew down and chopping him down. And yeah, this match was... And Drew was able to keep up.
Oh, yeah.
It was just constant offense from Cien Almas. Also, I mean, it's look, we both know La Sombra Almas was, you know, the founder, one of the founders of Los Ingobernables.
Yeah.
It is fun to watch. I notice it, but for some reason I noticed it in this match a tad more, just how much of a proto Naito he is, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much of the Naito stuff in Cien Almas.
Yeah, I know.
And they're roughly the same size, and it just got me thinking, I mentioned this to you, I think in the live stream, that, like, if you want to know what a Naito match might look like in NXT with, you know, a bit more Lucha influence anyways, look at this match.
Yeah.
You know?
I think Naito really highlights that kind of... I mean, he's charismatic as hell, but he does it in such an aloof manner.
Yeah.
Granted, I haven't seen Almas, his work in New Japan or CMLL.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I don't know if he did something similar.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of, I mean, I don't necessarily disagree with your general point, but I think that's the one thing that separates them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More so is I think Naito really does the aloof
mm-hmm.
thing a lot more than at least Almas has shown in NXT.
Yeah. I mean, they've kind of made that into, and that's part of his story. It's not, I mean, there's the party stuff, but there's also just you know, blasé attitude in the ring,
yeah.
you know, that he sort of had to fight against. But I don't know. It just gets me. It gets me thinking. Like, I don't know. I love Naito. I'm not sure I'd ever want to see him in WWE. I'm just not sure how his thing would translate.
Over yeah, I don't know. Here, well, know? I mean, there's two aspects to it. I think it would translate okay because when we went to the, granted this is a small sample size, the New Japan shows in Long Beach, he got one of the louder pops.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's Omega, him, and Okada got the loudest pops.
Yeah,
easily. So I think the gimmick would translate here. Whether WWE would let him do things how he's been doing them in New Japan, I think that's the larger issue.
Well, that's a no. But also, the way WWE does their stories,
mm-hmm.
that's, I think, a huge issue because you can kill a guy with, you know, sometimes with the WWE presentation of their stories.
Or like what they're doing with Nakamura right now.
Like what they've done with a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's brought up Nakamura because he's a huge
but no, that's
star
the, no,
in Japan.
And that's the best.
Pretty much,
you know,
been relegated to the mid-card.
Yeah.
And I still understand why he was eliminated first last night, but whatever.
Yeah.
We'll get to that during our Survivor Series recap.
Yes.
Or we did talk about that during our Survivor Series recap. Back to Almas versus Drew McIntyre. Fun match. Drew kicked out of the Hammerlock DDT.
Yeah. Ooh. Uh-oh. That was his finisher.
That's Almas' finisher, mm-hmm. yeah. And then McIntyre hits Claymore.
Mm-hmm.
Almas put his foot on the ropes.
Boy, that was like a razor-thin margin, too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And then let's talk about the spot to finish it. I've been doing some research into things.
Yeah, okay.
As much as I can. So Drew is up in the top rope. Almas kind of pulls him off so his feet are just on the ropes. Kind of like what Orton does with his draping DDT, but it's off the top rope. DDTs him. Drew holds on to the top rope, from what I understand, too long. Because Taz tweeted about it. A couple other wrestlers tweeted about it. As soon as I saw the spot, he's like, tore his bicep.
Oh, wow.
Because he held on the top rope too long on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just probably pulled the muscle off the bone.
Mm.
One with that. Shocking win for Almas. The only thing I'd find about whether that was the intended finish was on Cage Side Seats, the rumor roundup thing today. Said, yes, Almas was booked to win.
Really?
Yeah.
Because of a Drew call-up, do we know?
Yeah, that's what they speculated.
Wow. That's not terribly surprising. I mean, Drew has no business sticking around. And it for a couple different reasons, he's obviously ready for prime time like yesterday. He was on the main roster a while ago. But the people they're bringing in are so small compared to him. You need a level playing field, you know? And it's like, I know there are people out there who tweet at us and say in our comments, you know, it's pro wrestling. The big versus small thing doesn't matter. Look at AJ versus Brock last night. But when you have so many people on one level, like physically, it just doesn't make sense to always have to be dancing around the idea that they're so much smaller. Because they did that here with Almas, you know, and it was effective.
Mm-hmm.
They danced around. They made the build. Drew is massive. He's huge.
Yeah.
He's a huge human being. And he can be within a year, he could be monster status.
Oh, yeah.
Because we always talk about there's Braun, Brock, Roman. Joe kind of is monster-ish. There's the big bastard monster guys that Drew would fit right in with because he's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a couple inches taller than Lesnar.
Yeah.
Because he's, what, 6'6", I think?
About 6'6",
he's like 6'6". Brock is like 6'3".
Yeah.
I mean, he'll be looking down at Brock.
Yeah.
And so you've got all these other guys, and even Aleister Black is 6 feet. Mm-hmm. And so he's going to be towering above Adam Cole, Almas, and all these other guys.
I don't know how tall Almas is. Did we look that up?
Oh, no, he's Almas is 5'10".
Really?
Naito's 5'11". And then all of Undisputed Era, I think, is 5'11 also.
Almas looked taller than that against Drew, I thought.
Yeah, I know. When you're 6'6 versus 5'10", it didn't look like that much.
No. But they, you know, based on Almas' style, I think they picked the right guy to take that title off.
Oh, Drew, for sure. Absolutely.
Because he can keep that pace up.
Yeah.
Adam Cole isn't known to wrestle that fast with pace, you know?
Yeah. And on top of that, there is an element of Drew. This worked for a couple reasons. Number one, what you just said. Number two, there's an element of Drew where you could make the case that his self-assuredness maybe on some level gets him to look past his opponent. I mean, they never explicitly said it. It was never a thing. But you can kind of read into it, given the condescending way he, not condescending, but the way he kind of talks down to Zelina Vega. Hey, Zelina, how you doing? I told you 3 times. He sort of treated Almas like a pest.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look past somebody, you're in danger of losing to that person. Yeah. And again, that wasn't part of a story, but that's how I looked into it. And when you have somebody who's so big fighting somebody who's so small, I think that's a natural conclusion that you can come to.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's so small, you can look past him. You can literally look over him. So the look on his face, I know it was, I just tore my bicep.
Oh, yeah.
But in character, in universe, you could also read it as, I can't believe I let that guy do that.
Yeah, well, the level of disappointment, regardless of what inspired it.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Seemed genuine because it was genuine.
Yeah.
I know as soon as that he hits the mat, as Almas is getting pinned on him, I feel like he did this. Mm. As soon as the pinfall was counted,
you can see
he starts
it looks,
grabbing over to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it looks wonky.
And so he's sitting in the ring, and he's got both his arms bent. And on his left bicep, there's a hunk of muscle up here. And his right bicep didn't look the same way.
Yeah.
So he probably tore his... I mean, I'm no medical doctor, but...
Yeah.
Seems like he might have tore his bicep, which is a bummer. That's probably, what, 6 months on the shelf?
Yeah.
So we're talking after Mania.
Yep.
A bummer.
What are we in, November?
It'd be May.
Yeah, I mean, they might be able to bring him out the Raw after Mania.
Yeah.
Not the fight, but for promo stuff. Yeah.
War Games.
He'll get a huge pop, too.
Oh, yeah.
War Games. War Games.
It was ridiculous.
This was so stupid.
It was brutal.
I loved every second of it. It was so beyond stupid, but it was so much fun.
Here's the thing. There's one thing that bothered me, and it seemed completely unnecessary. The stipulation, the rule that no one can get pinned until everybody's in the ring.
Yeah.
Why make that a thing?
Oh, I like that. Was that an original War Games thing?
I don't remember. But then Moro saying, this match doesn't actually start until everybody's in the ring. It's like, just don't mention it. If people go for a pinfall, you can work around that.
Yeah.
It just added an additional detail that seemed completely superfluous.
Well, okay, here's the thing. I'm okay with that. But in terms of details and rules, that ridiculous screenshot, that just added to
ridiculous. I know.
That screenshot of all the rules.
Yeah.
I even tweeted about it. It was so dumb. I was like, what is this, a freaking essay I have to read now? Just to get in this match?
Please do that too.
Oh, yeah, exactly. that being said, okay, so what did you think? Can you do, off the top of your head, can you do Undisputed Era gang sign?
It's...
they cross hands?
This. Yeah, they cross hands.
So this guy goes up like this.
Yeah, it's like a backwards too sweet.
Okay, like this.
Yeah.
Am I doing it? Undisputed
Era. And then the Wolfpack sign.
Yeah. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
Who the hell came up with this?
Probably Adam Cole.
Let's see. Probably Adam Cole. Okay, it's been a really cool gang sign. Okay, where are we even freaking starting?
I will say this match was an absolute star-making turn for Killian Dane.
Oh, for sure.
And it finally gave Adam Cole a really good platform to show off his personality.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what's funny? I need to watch more Adam Cole matches because the one he had against Roderick Strong, and I know Roderick Strong is friggin' 105 in my book, but Adam Cole can put on really, really good matches, and I'm trying to figure out why. Doesn't do high spots. Well, fuck, he did a suplex off the top friggin' off the cage.
I know.
So there was that. But he gets by force of personality and super kicks.
Yeah.
But man, he can put on some good matches. Yeah. He can sell really well. Maybe that's just, he can just sell really well.
He sells well. He's a decent storyteller.
He's a good storyteller.
He's got a massive personality.
Dude, if you can sell really well, if you can make people believe that you're hurting and you're a good storyteller, you can understand pace and build.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Psychology, all that stuff.
Yeah, he understands all that.
Anyways, Undisputed Era is the first team in, which meant that... Oh!
Well, first of all, Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, and Eric Young start. Roderick Strong was cosplaying as a member of Authors of Pain. That was a bit much.
That was so... Because here's the thing. He had the dumb doily over his head, right? And so he comes out. He literally looks like he doesn't know. He's like...
Yeah, he's kind of wandering out as if he can't see. Because first, Authors of Pain and Paul Ellering come out.
Right.
And then Ellering looks behind him to the ramp or the entranceway, and out kind of stumbles Roderick Strong. Like he can't get that towel off his head fast enough, or whatever it was.
And it's like, dude, he looks like a little kid cosplaying as AOP.
You posted
really
a picture
does.
Of what? You had a blanket or a hand towel on your head?
Yeah. Oh, man. I make myself laugh sometimes. Anyways, I thought that was hilarious, but it was awesome. But it was so cool because it's goofy.
Yeah.
And wrestling sometimes is just at its best when it's being kind of goofy like that.
I know.
Like, that's not taking yourself too seriously. No. He had to look at himself. I guarantee backstage Adam Cole cracked a joke about him looking like a junior author of Pain, you know?
I know.
Anyways.
I wonder if Roderick Strong tried to look at himself in the mirror with that thing on his head and couldn't see through it.
Probably. They were probably cracking up.
Probably.
I'm sure all these guys get a kick out of each other. Anyways. So then comes Sanity. They're all in a shark cage. What is it? How does it work again?
So one member of each team starts off the match. So we had Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, and Eric Young. Mm-hmm. And the remaining two members of the other teams, or of each of the teams, stand in a shark cage. And every 5 minutes,
one of the teams is released.
One of the teams is released from the shark cage, yes. So after 5 minutes... Of just beating each other up, Undisputed Era, Bobby Fish, mm-hmm. Kyle O'Reilly come in the ring.
Yeah.
So they have 5 minutes to do as much damage on Eric Young and Roderick Strong as they can.
Right, exactly.
Second, Authors of Pain. There's that great bit where Authors of Pain were throwing everybody from one ring to the other.
That was awesome.
And then they used Roderick Strong as a weapon.
Yes, a projectile.
And then threw him into everybody else.
That was fantastic. That was awesome. That was great.
There's a lot of really good creative spots. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. But it was, no, like you said, it was very creative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sanity is the last team released from the shark cage.
How did you like Alexander Wolf with the baton?
That was great.
It was one of the ones that like...
Telescopes. Yeah.
Telescopes. Yeah. So he comes in. I was like, oh my God.
That was great.
That was fantastic.
I kind of wish he had moshed before he started hitting people with it. That's the only thing that could have been added to it. So he brings a baton. Damo starts throwing in chairs and kendo sticks and a chain. And the crowd starts chanting for tables. He obliges, tosses the tables in the ring. And then there's a stretch where it was the Killian Dane show.
Oh, man.
There was that dropkick senton.
Yeah. Oh, that was fun. That was so
awesome.
Cool.
There was the Michinoku driver that he did on Adam Cole onto Bobby Fish.
Yeah, that was good.
And then, of course, kind of culminated in his coast to coast.
He went coast to coast.
It's crazy.
What did you think when you saw that? Because somebody mentioned on the stream.
Yeah, that spot, yeah.
It was pretty insane, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. I mean, once he put the garbage can in front of Kyle O'Reilly's head, it was like, oh, so you can do coast to coast?
Right.
Because Adam Cole is in the top of the cage at that point, kind of clinging to it.
Yeah.
He looks up at Adam Cole and is like, "Is he going to throw Adam Cole off there onto Kyle O'Reilly?"
Mm-hmm.
But he was just talking trash, got the top turnbuckle and did it. I'm like,
yeah.
Hats off, Damo.
No kidding.
You're a star today now, for
the,
sure.
Authors of Pain hit a super collider on, they were on,
And then
in each ring.
Yeah, and Damo was in the middle.
Was in the middle, right.
And they took Fish and O'Reilly and the Super Collider onto the Killian Dane.
That was fantastic.
Alexander Wolf put a big old hole in his head, doing a German suplex through tables.
He looked like he got shot in the head, man.
Yeah, that was a lot of blood.
There was a lot of blood.
So one of the Authors of Pain members, they didn't mention which one, threw a table, two tables.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had a huge gash in his head, blood everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then Adam Cole, for the longest time, was hanging out on top of the cage.
Yeah.
He stands up like as he do a spot, gets a massive Adam Cole baby up there. It was awesome.
He looks down and is like,
Well, then Roderick Strong's looking back at him. And he's like, ooh.
Yeah.
He starts to get down. Roderick Strong scales the top of the cage. The
crowd starts chanting, please don't die.
Yeah.
Because it seemed very uncertain
they
up
there.
They
were taking their time.
They were taking their time.
Doing things
every
safely.
Foot where it belongs.
Yes.
Adam Cole was holding on for dear life to the... Cage
waiting for everybody to get in position down in the ring.
Yeah.
Roderick Strong superplexes Adam Cole off the top of the cage onto everybody.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
And then Adam Cole kicks out at yes. two.
That was great. That was great. Oh, wait. Did we mention the, I didn't see it in your notes, with the great symmetrical camera shot.
Oh, yeah. After the Authors of Pain powerbomb, everybody else.
Yeah.
Adam Cole sitting there on the ring post.
Right.
Kind of reveling in it.
And you have, so like the camera guy is on one side in the middle.
Yeah.
And so you've got like sort of these, you know, the ring ropes leading towards Adam Cole.
And he's sitting on the.
In your shot. And he's sitting on top of both ring posts. And the Authors of Pain are coming for him, but then everybody else goes after the Authors of Pain, and they all end up with one of those big, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Powerbomb
suplex things off the ropes. Adam Cole's just sitting there.
And Adam Cole just sits there.
Realizes.
And he has a big old smile after he realizes that he just survived the storm.
Yeah. It was great.
It was fantastic. And then Adam Cole got a pin on Eric Young. Oh, how'd you like that bit where Kyle O'Reilly gives himself an unprotected headshot?
Oh, that was funny.
Off the ropes, like that. That was great.
That was pretty funny.
Adam Cole got the pin on Eric Young.
With the Shining Wizard, Eric Young got a chair up to try to hit Adam Cole or something.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Cole did a Shining Wizard on it and got the pin.
Yeah.
Undisputed Era, your winners of War Games.
Yeah. Surprisingly, there was no Roderick Strong. I think once you're in that Authors of Pain outfit...
Your Authors of Pain for life.
In a match like this, there's not a real great way you can swerve. I mean, I guess you could. Was Mr. Perfect's NWO swerve on the Horseman? Was that in a War Games match? It was in a cage.
I think it was a War Games match.
So I guess you can, but given that you know you've got all these time marks, that are happening, it's kind of difficult to justify like beating the living crap out of somebody. We've talked about this before. How like swerves don't really make a lot of sense if you're like if it's at the end of a match and you've already beaten up a guy.
I know. And there's a lot of sequences between Cole and Strong.
Yeah.
Someone on Twitter, I can't remember who, when they were talking about almost winning the belt, speculated that'd be Roderick Strong getting the belt off him.
I could see that. That would make sense.
And leading to a Cole Strong feud for the title.
That would make sense. Yeah.
Totally would. Fun show.
Yeah.
NXT always delivers with these takeovers.
Man, this is my favorite of the year.
Okay.
This was totally my favorite of the year.
All right.
Because there was a lot of, I mean, just so much good stuff. That War Games was so inspired by the kind of stuff that I just absolutely love. That sort of early 90s, mid-90s, weird WCW stuff.
They just need to spin the wheel, make the deal.
Right, exactly.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, spin the wheel, make the deal, yeah. Wait, why did you look at that?
Because it's on that poster.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Sasha.
Yeah, sorry, Sasha.
Anyways, that's it. Let us know what you guys thought of NXT TakeOver War Games in the comments below. Where's my out music? There it is. Should be getting some music now. Anyways, that's it for now. Thanks for watching. Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.